This hour is brought to you by Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management.
I want to thank you so much for joining us and welcome you into the Retirement Room with John Blanchard, Acadiana's retirement strategist for Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management. To find out more about John and the team at MatthewJames.com, you can also give a call, 366-8366. Set up a time to speak with them. That phone number once again, 337-366-8366. Today on the show, we have the unspoken truths about retiring early. And if you suffer from the fear of missing that paycheck when you retire, we might have an answer. All this and more. But first, Jordan Belfort, he was the main subject of the movie The Wolf of Wall Street. After a 22-month stint in prison, he is out, and he wrote a book called The Wolf of Investing. He's pretty critical of the fees that big financial firms charge. During an interview recently with Tucker Carlson, he told the story of Vanguard's Jack Bogle, who went to war on fees.
When he started Vanguard, Wall Street went out on the ultimate smear campaign for like a decade, suppressing everything about index funds, saying it's the stupidest thing. Who wants to be average? Dreyfus, which is a huge mutual fund company, said, no fees, no way. So for many, many years, Vanguard languished and was suppressed, right? It finally got traction after the crash in 87. For the first time, all of a sudden, you know, the mirage evaporated when everyone lost a lot of money. And for the first time, it suddenly became a mass exodus out of these, like, you know, sort of high expense mutual funds, right? And Bogle saved the public probably a few hundred billion by now in fees. Mutual funds were ripping people's eyeballs out forever.
Now, I know a fee analysis is something you and the team at Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management do for clients. What are some of the common things you find when you do these analyses?
Well, look, there's a lot of unknown that, you know, what people are getting into as far as an expense goes. I mean, we're seeing, you know, with mutual funds, I mean, these are one of the two highest feed investment vehicles that you can get into. And so what will happen is if you have an A-share mutual fund, number one, you're paying a fee getting into it. So the initial investment in there, there's typically, and there's a scale, like your first 25,000, there's a percentage that comes out. The next 25,000, there's a lower percentage, the next 25,000, et cetera. So each mutual fund family itself has a fee schedule on their A-share mutual funds, which means they're taking an upfront sales charge. That sales charge typically is around 5, could be 5.5, could be 5.75 of a percent being removed from your deposit. And so that goes to the mutual fund family. The mutual fund family takes that. As far as the mutual fund family, I mean by the company. So let's say a Franklin Templeton or Invesco, or, you know, there's so many of them out there. Mm-hmm. But so what happens is there's money that gets taken out, and then that gets paid to the fund manager, but a portion of it goes to the broker dealer. So because you can only buy mutual funds through a broker dealer, and then the broker dealer has agents, or, you know, your financial representatives that are the ones that are actually, you're the one getting it from. So you got to think about the formation of the company. So mutual funds flow through a broker dealer as far as a distribution center, and that distribution center has agents, let's call them representatives, that you, the client, actually talk to. So what happens is that broker dealer gets paid a portion of it, and a portion of that amount of the upfront sales charge goes to the actual agent. So typically around, roughly around 35 basis points, there's a portion of fee, the way the math works out. But anyway, there's a number that goes to them. And then also there's a reoccurring fee every year on the mutual fund as an expense ratio. You know, that could be 0.5%. It could be 1%. I've seen them as high as 2% a year. I mean, that's not a lot of them, but they're there. So the thing is, most people don't know what's the expense that they're paying. Because let's say if you're getting, you have a fee-based account, you're paying a management fee of, let's say, 1% or maybe more, and then you have underlying security as a mutual fund. Now, whenever you have a fee-based account, you don't have an A-share mutual fund where they're taking out a fee as well whenever you put the money in. That's not the right way of doing things. And we don't typically see that, or I don't think I've really seen that at all. But what they have is a standard mutual fund where you're not paying it up front, but you're just paying a higher, you know, you have an expense ratio in there. So what happens is you're getting stacked with a fee. So you have the underlying security, which, look, if you have an ETF, you're paying a fee as well. But typically most ETFs are around what they call 10 basis points. So a 10th of 1%, maybe a 15th of 1%, maybe a 20th of 1%. But what happens is with mutual funds, typically it's 1%, 0.5%, 0.75% that you're paying, maybe a little bit higher, depends. But so most people aren't aware of the actual cost of the internal investments that they're using. Sometimes they're also not even understanding, okay, if you're paying, they're told, hey, like you're paying 1%. Well, the 1% might be for the person that you're directly talking to, but then there's another fee potentially that's being paid to a money manager. Then there's another fee for the actual internal position. So that would be the mutual fund, the ETF, et cetera. Now, another thing that we find pretty appalling is whenever people come in with variable annuities. These are the most expensive financial vehicles out there. So what will happen is the insurance company is going to charge you a contract fee called a mortality and expense charge. So normally that's around 1%, probably even north of 1%, maybe a little bit under. Sometimes they separate the admin fee, which is typically on, you know, it's either 15 basis points. It might be $20, you know, a year. So they have different numbers. And then typically when you're buying a variable annuity, the person selling it to you is trying to stack on other benefits to make it sound good, sweeten up the deal. Now they're not making more money from it, but what'll happen is they'll add another charge. Typically, like it's an enhanced death benefit or maybe an income rider to get guaranteed income. Like I think these are all phony and I wouldn't put my money in that type of vehicle. But what you see is as far as an expense goes, typically on a death benefit rider, you're probably paying around 1%. And then on the income rider, you're probably paying 1% or maybe a little bit more on that, or maybe a little bit less. But like even on the death benefit rider, you could probably go buy a term insurance policy cheaper than what that death benefit rider is costing you for the amount of value that it's going to give you, if we're looking at the math. But bottom line is that when you stack these up, but inside the variable annuity, they're typically offering proprietary mutual funds that have a pretty high internal fee. So that's typically around 1%, maybe a little bit more. I've seen them by 1.75%. That's pretty high. So what happens is whenever you add these up, you're typically paying around 3.5%. 3.25% to 3.75% as far as an annual reoccurring fee. So then, you know, if you're looking at, okay, I'm trying to figure out why my account's not growing, mm-hmm. especially in volatile times or a down year, and you're taking withdrawals, is because you have, you know, let's say in a negative year, you have a triple negative going against you. The market's down, you're taking income, and you're paying a high fee. So, you know, the thing is, we look at this and say, okay, look, let's look at an exit strategy, how to pull money out and then repurpose that money to where it can perform better and have lower management fees, lower management costs associated with it.
You know, making sure that you're paying, you know, as little as possible when it comes to fees. There is certain, obviously, value. You know, some things are worth the price that you're paying, but so many of these fees are buried in prospectuses and things like that. They're underlying and you don't really understand. So if the math hasn't really been making sense to you in the past couple of years, you know, especially last year being a pretty good year. But if you don't feel like you were getting quite what you're, you know, what the returns say that they should have been, perhaps it is the fees that you're paying. A fee analysis is something the team at Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management can do for you, can run for you, you know, run those numbers, show you what you are actually paying. And then if you realize that, you know, maybe you're paying more than necessary, maybe you don't think that you're getting that value, exploring other options, ways to pivot into something that's going to be a little bit more fruitful for you. But it all starts with that fee analysis. And actually, it starts with that phone call to the team at Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management. 366-8366 is how you get started. It's 366-8366 or online at MatthewJames.com. Back in 2015, Oprah Winfrey made headlines when she bought a 10% stake in Weight Watchers and was then appointed to the company's board of directors. But Winfrey recently said she's stepping down this coming May after revealing she actually took a weight loss drug. So the question remains, what about that $18 million that she had in Weight Watcher stock? She's actually going to be donating that to charity. And in the process, she is going to be getting a big tax break. So that is a way to turn lemons into lemonade, a tax strategy that she had access to that she knows about. John, what are some other tax strategies that can do the same sort of thing?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot of things that she can do, you know, with the proceeds. She can, let's say, take, you know, let's look at, okay, she wants to give it to charity. Now, how can you use that charitable, you know, gift to turn around and be a tax deduction and move assets? So she can actually take these proceeds, put it inside of a charitable remainder trust, so which means the remaining value upon your death goes to the actual charity. But what happens is you get an upfront deduction. So like we use this type of strategy for people where we're moving assets, you know, to a charity, But what happens is we can take assets that haven't been taxed yet. So for an example, if we take a let's say I take an IRA, and we can move that IRA for the certain proportion of it, depending on what you put inside that charitable remainder trust, over to a Roth IRA without even paying taxes. So we're shifting assets over. We can do other things where we can make a, you know, if you're not charitable inclined, but ideally we want to look at, you know, what's the big picture you're trying to do here. Maybe you have gains in other accounts that you want to stay, okay, I want to go ahead and start backing out of this. I want to sell these positions and go in a different direction. So you can actually use the donation to offset gains for harvesting, you know, harvesting your gains. So you have like, we call tax loss harvesting, but in this case, we're using a deduction to offset the gains, you know, basically to go that route. We even have other options where we can make a donation into an orphan drug and get a 5X on that. So let's say if you took five grand and you put inside this orphan drug donation. So it has nothing to do with charity. So you're not receiving any money back. But in this case, you can make a donation, and then with that donation, you get a 5X multiple on your donation. So let's say if you donate $100,000, that means you get $500,000 of a tax deduction. Now, the other thing you got to look at too is if you're going that route, you can only use it up to 50% of your AGI. So in this case, your AGI has to be $1 million. So then instead of you being taxed on $1 million of income, you're only being taxed on $500,000 of income. Look at the Dodgers baseball player that signed this, you know, $70 million contract for 10 years, $700 million contract. He would normally pay $389 million roughly in combined taxes, federal, state, and Medicare tax. Well, if every year he put in $6.8 million into the actual, let's say this orphan drug donation, that would give him a multiple of five, which would get him to $34 million of a tax deduction. So he would show $68 million of income. He gets 34 of it wiped away. Over a 10-year period, he would save himself $169 million of total taxes that he would have to pay the federal and the state, federal government and the state of California, and the Medicare tax. So what we have to do is look at, you know, if you're going to be taking assets and then donating it, how can we use it to your advantage? Mm-hmm. And so there's some specialized estate planning that can be done, the charitable remainder trust. So there's a different types of tools you can use. But also, if you have highly appreciated stock, you know, we can also take those assets and move it into a tax deferred strategy, a specialized trust. And so what happens is you're taking that stock, moving it there, and then therefore you're, number one, not paying taxes on the sale of that stock, but also you're not paying taxes on any future growth or dividends the way the trust is set up, and then you're only paying taxes on the distribution. Now, but the other thing that we have to look at is what's the big picture? What are you trying to do? If you're really trying to give away money, are you trying to lower your tax burden? But we also have to look at who's going to be the recipient. How can they receive this most tax efficient? So like if you're trying to, you know, get rid of stock, but maybe that stock could be inherited by your children and they get to step up in basis, that is more lucrative because now they're basically getting their cost basis moves up to fair market value, which basically means they could sell it and barely pay anything, if anything at all.
And you know, and you don't have to be a media mogul like Oprah Winfrey or a baseball superstar like Shohei Ohtani to be able to utilize these tax strategies. You have to, A, first of all, know about them, and then B, know how to properly deploy them. And you know, I think it's probably not something that you need to go on your own. I quite frankly, I'm not sure if you can do it on your own. But the team at Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management, they could take a look at your situation, see what it is that you want to do, whether it is donations or what have you, and figure out a tax efficient strategy with your finances. But you have to take that step and reach out to them, give a call, make sure that you get to keep as much of your money as possible, give Uncle Sam as little as possible. 366-8366 is how you start with that. Begin that process, 366-8366, or the website is MatthewJames.com. You can always find them online on the website, MatthewJames.com. The Fed is meeting again in the coming week to talk about interest rates. Wall Street is betting on the fact that a rate cut's not going to happen. And here's market analyst Pete Najarian on Fox Business.
So many people at the start of this year were predicting that there was going to be six or more rate cuts. I never agreed with that commentary, but it looks like we're going to probably, as we go through the year, if things kind of go through the way expected, we're probably going to see this year about two cuts, maybe, but the rest are going to be pauses. And I think this next one's going to be a pause as well.
Now, if he's right, then the Fed is carrying through with its pledge of higher interest rates for longer. John, is it too early to pull out of some fixed income investments and put more into the stock market?
Well, but look, we also have to, look at where the stock market's at. The market's still extremely overpriced. So if you're looking at being long on a position, you're buying it at a very high valuation. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got to look at, NVIDIA took a turn, last week. So how did, or week before last, something like that, however many days ago it was. But so we have to look at the AI driven stocks, how they have, turned, on us. So even that position. Well, you know what? Finally, let me go ahead and buy in. I'm going to buy in on the 8th of March at its all-time high of $974. And then the next week, basically it goes to 856 around 8, depending on what day you look at. So the thing is that we have to make sure we're placing our money for the purpose on what you need, how you need it to perform. If you're looking for capital appreciation, well, look, you're buying in on a high, and Warren Buffett isn't dumping billions of dollars into the market on an inflated pricing right now. I mean, why would you do that? I mean, any person wouldn't go to a department store and say, hey, look, I like that pair of shoes. I see it's on sale. When's it going to go back up to retail price? I want to come back and buy it when you mark it back up. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do that. So we have to look at this. So it's right now, I mean, even though rates have when you look at banks and CDs, it's not as high as what it was, but it's still decent. But the thing is, this is not a long-term plan as far as keeping, your money in principal protected options like this that have a decent interest rate, because you plan on at some point walking away soon, buying back into the market to get a higher yield. Now, you might have a managed model that functions completely different. And so it all depends on what you have access to. But ideally, it's all a part of the big picture. What's the strategy? What's the purpose of your money? What are you trying to do? How are you trying to solve income? What about Roth conversions? We have to look at all these different things in holistic point of view to make sure that we're making the right move in the right direction.
It's all about thinking about the big picture, especially as you get closer and closer to retirement. Not to say that you can't have, if it's what you want to do, you want to have a little bit of money to play with for the sake of day trading, but it doesn't need to be the entirety of your portfolio, not by a long shot, but, being able to know when to pivot, when to move things, when the right time is, when to buy and sell, and perhaps when interest rates do go down, maybe reinvest that money into the market at that point. Really depending on the circumstances, but being tactical about it and not just going with emotions. The team at Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management, they can help you not just create that plan, create that strategy, but also instill perhaps that discipline that you may need to maintain that plan and not shoot yourself in the foot down the line when it comes to making knee-jerk decisions. It all starts by picking up the phone, reaching out to them, 366-8366. Now, when many think about retirement, they look forward to easy days, filled with leisurely activities, lots of naps. So the question is, why not retire early? Well, John, I came across a list of the unspoken truths about early retirement that no one really talks about. Are these things that you talk to your clients about? You maybe warn them? And are there still ways that, despite these challenges, you can help them retire early?
So some of the things that people worry about are maybe they didn't calculate, they didn't factor in is, if they're retiring early. And so early means early could be pre 59 and a half, and also early could be pre 65. So we have to look at, both of them. So pre 59 and a half, you have two things kind of going against you. Number one, you have, the whole medical cost. Mm-hmm. This is an out-of-pocket expense that you have to look at. You have to look at how much income that you're showing, because that's going to determine how much your premiums for healthcare are going to be. So we have to look at how Obamacare gets calculated and what kind of subsidy that you would receive. So the more income that you show, the less subsidy that you'll get as a household. Now, if you have a dependent, that's even more beneficial. You get a higher subsidy in the event you have a dependent as a child that not just you and your spouse if you're married. So the other thing that we have to look at is access to money. So if you have a brokerage account, an individual account, a joint account, look, you can have access to all that money before 59 and a half. There's no issue at all. Now, if you have money in IRAs or 401ks, then that becomes a little hairy, because then you're subject to a 10% early withdrawal penalty if you're below 59 and a half. But there's also some rules that give you access to that money before 59 and a half, but you have to withdraw that money over a 5-year time period. And you have to be accurate on the amount of money that you're pulling out each and every year, so you don't get you don't trigger a tax on all of those distributions over that time period. So it's all about appropriating money where you have money in a taxable account that you can have access to before 59 and a half. And then post 59 and a half, you have access to your IRAs and your Roth accounts, any tax deferred vehicles, because there's no 10% early withdrawal penalty subject to the withdrawals, because you're taking the funds right after or after you're 59 at age 59 and a half. Now, the other thing is that we look at prior to age 65, because your healthcare starts, your Medicare starts at age 65. So any income that you take before then, it, like I said, is subject to higher premiums. So it's all about having a plan on what your income is going to be, where you're going to get the money from, you know, in the event you're retiring early. Is it doable? Absolutely. But it's all about having a plan to do so. And so that's the things that we have to structure. So maybe you have some highly appreciated stock that you want to sell off before age 65. And even before 59 and a half that you can realize, because you can show a pretty decent amount of money in realized capital gains and not pay taxes, which is pretty lucrative. Mm-hmm. So we have to look at how that dollar gets taxed. Now, the other option would be Roth IRA income. Now, you can't start pulling that money until you've passed the test of being 59 and a half and you've had the account for at least 5 years. But let's say if you had the account for at least 5 years, you hit 59 and a half, then you can turn on that valve of income, and that's completely tax-free depending on how much money you have in there. So ideally, we just have to look at what's appropriate, what's the way of doing these things. But what we want to do is making sure that if you are trying to retire early, how to do it without you becoming health insurance premium broke.
While we all may certainly aspire to retire early, one thing that we don't want to have to do is find ourselves back in the workforce out of necessity. So just running the numbers and making sure it all works out and that you know the ins and outs of it is as simple as sitting down and speaking with someone like Acadiana's retirement strategist. You can do that by giving a call, 366-8366, or visiting them on the website and scheduling a time to speak with Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management as well. That is at MatthewJames.com. Because here's the thing, year after year, the stories and the surveys, they reach the same result. The number one fear of people in retirement is, in fact, running out of money. There was an article in the Washington Post that interviewed several people that had done a good job of saving for retirement, a lot of them debt-free. I know, John, you're a big advocate of that. Some with nice pensions, but the fear still remained. It still persisted, and they can't shake the insecurity of walking away from that regular paycheck that they get every 2 weeks. So, John, as a retirement planner, how do you explain that, and how can you help hopefully alleviate those fears?
So the thing is, look, this is a big transition for a lot of people, and you know, it's one thing when you love your job and you're getting paid very well. We have a client that we just brought on board. He was in that position, gets paid very well. And so it's hard to walk away from. And he's above 65. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is, you know, I had a conversation with him because, you know, he has more than enough money to retire for the lifestyle that him and his wife have. Now, his wife's a little bit younger. So there's a health insurance component, you know, issue there. He can retire, but then, you know, if she retires, then, you know, we got to look at the health insurance premiums that they have to pay. You know, what is that going to look like on the exchange? So these are some of the things that we have to go and look at and calculate, let's say, in for their particular scenario. But the thing is, too, is that, you know, we don't know how long we're going to be on this earth for. So we've had people, I think it was like 4 or 5 clients over the last 2 years that have passed away almost after they retired, or a few of them have became very ill where they can't really enjoy their retirement. They can't travel. They can't do all these things that they want to do because the only traveling they're doing is from doctor appointment to doctor appointment. And so, you know, you got to look at quality of life while you're young, while you're healthy, while your body is in good shape. knock on wood, there's, you know, hopefully you have no issues. Ideally, you want to have, you know, the very beginning stage of retirement where you can go and, you know, travel, enjoy yourself, and do all these fun things that you've been planning for, these maybe bucket list items that you have. The thing is that, you know, if you're still, you know, even though you're happy with your job and you're making a lot of money, but you're not fulfilling all of these goals, then you have to look at, okay, what's more valuable for me? Getting paid this high salary, having this high income, even though I love my job, mm-hmm. and not taking advantage of the things that I want to do. Because look, at the end of the day, we got to look at, you know, spending time with your loved ones. You know, maybe your children are finally having their own children, so now you have these brand new grandbabies or maybe grandkids that you've had the last couple of years, and now you're able to spend more time with them. You know, there's all these little things, you know, in life that, you know, we take for granted that, you know, we only have so much time and access to, you know, to spectate and to, you know, to be able to enjoy. So the thing is, that's what you have to look at, is what's the actual experience that you could be missing out on because you are taking in that higher dollar. And so these are things that we have to look at and measure and decide on what we're going to do and what's the right decision to make for, you know, for your future, for, you know, your retirement, to really be happy and really enjoy it. So that's the thing I would look at. You know, if you're, you know, if you have adequate money and you're not happy with work anymore, you don't have the, you know, the passion, the fire's not burning anymore, I would say definitely walk away. Mm-hmm. But obviously the key thing is where your finances are in order. So, but ideally it's like, look, if you have adequate assets and you have the ability to, and your health is great, take advantage of it, go enjoy yourself, but have a plan that covers all the aspects, you know, for your retirement, you know, for the travel costs that you're going to have, for the healthcare costs, looking at, you know, how to be tax efficient. And then, you know, we have to look at all these things to make sure that you have the proper plan set up to live the life that you want to live in your retirement.
Matthew James Financial Group is not affiliated with nor endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency and does not provide legal or tax advice. Please consult with your attorney, accountant, and or tax advisor for advice concerning your particular circumstances. Annuity guarantees rely solely on the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurance company. Bonus annuities may include higher surrender charges, longer surrender charge periods, lower caps, higher spreads, or other restrictions that are not included in similar annuities that don't offer a premium bonus feature. Read your contract for restrictions, limitations, or penalties. By contacting us, you may be provided with information about insurance and annuity products offered through John Ronald Blanchard, Louisiana Insurance License Number 529925. Investment advisory services are offered through J. Hagen Capital, Inc., registered investment advisor. Insurance products offered separately through John Blanchard, license number 529925.
This hour was brought to you by Matthew James Tax and Wealth Management.